This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. In about half an hour, we're going to be diving into how the T20s are spending their ICNR money with Calvin Cheng of ISIS Malaysia. But in the meantime, let's talk about the country's vaccination efforts. Because in a televised address last week, Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin revealed some details about Malaysia's COVID-19 immunization program. The first phase will involve, I believe it is 500,000 frontliners being vaccinated.
Yep, the first batch of COVID-19 vaccines is set to arrive at the end of this month, and this first phase is scheduled to be completed by April. After the frontliners, priority will be given to those in the high-risk categories, such as senior citizens and people with certain illnesses like heart disease or diabetes, for example. This phase then is meant to go on until August. You start looking at others age 18 and above will be vaccinated between May this year and February 2022. The government has previously said that it will not be giving the vaccine to children, though. So that's kind of the lay of the land for the next few months.
And for a view on this, joining us on the line is Public Health Policy Specialist Dr. Kaur Swee King. Good morning, Dr. Kaur. Thank you for joining us. Now, the Prime Minister's outlined the national vaccination program for COVID-19. We'll start with frontliners, then move to vulnerable groups before the rest of the people by next February. What do you make of this proposed timeline? Is it feasible or perhaps not fast or ambitious enough? What are your thoughts here?
Well, Lynn, Roshan and Noel, it's a pleasure to be here. Well, firstly, when we look at the proposed timeline, we have to understand that this is a vaccination program like no other, meaning Malaysia has never had this vaccination program before where we're going to the entire population. Usually, our vaccination programs are age-targeted. For example, we give the BCG vaccine for tuberculosis to one-year-olds, and we give the HPV and the pneumococcal vaccine to specific age groups or target populations as well. But this is an unprecedented vaccination program because it literally covers the entire population. So it's difficult to say whether or not the timeline is feasible, not feasible, fast or too slow. But there are some considerations for us to consider, for us to think about whenever we're planning something like this. The first one is that the feasibility of it would involve real-world logistics in terms of the cold chain. For example, the Pfizer vaccine, which will arrive in just about a week or so, will need a storage and transport facilities that go all the way down to minus 70 Celsius. And that requires a significant retool of the way the cold chain facilities that we have in Malaysia, including additional facilities and ultra-low temperature freezers wherever they are needed. The second consideration would be that for us to learn the lessons from the rollouts of other countries. And if we look at the data from other countries, their rollouts have also been plagued with delays, and the delays come from various reasons. The first one could be production delays and supply constraints. So in other words, Malaysia might not have the vaccines delivered to us on time, even though we have the infrastructure ready, because this has been evident in the, dispute between the European Union and the United Kingdom. To the point that the European Union is threatening export bans as well as lawsuits against Pfizer as well as the United Kingdom. So that's one reason for delay, and that needs to be built into our national vaccination program. The second consideration or second lesson from other countries would be that the logistics of it is daunting, with the bearing in mind the caveat that wastage, abuse, and even sabotage has been reported to happen in other countries as well. So the two main considerations for Malaysia as we embark on this vaccination program is to learn the lessons from other countries, as well as to build in the possibility of delays, and to ensure that the logistical supply of the vaccination program would be robust enough to ensure that we can deliver the vaccines safely and effectively.
The government estimates that it would have something like 41 million doses in 2021, and that would cover about 67% of the population for two doses. Is this sufficient to achieve herd immunity, and bearing in mind that we have a potentially huge unaccounted for population like those without legal papers?
Well, to understand that question, first we have to define what is herd immunity. And at the moment, scientists are divided, meaning the epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists and public health specialists. We don't know yet what constitutes herd immunity and whether or not that might even be scientifically possible. But let's assume it is, and let's give a number to it. And that number is 70%. It could be a bit higher, you know, it could be about 80 to 90% of herd immunity as well. But let's operate on the number 70%. If we're going to exclude children and those below the age of 18, then we might, and we exclude all those people with, say, who are immunocompromised, women who are pregnant, and people who are naturally unable to receive the vaccine, we might only be just able to cover 70% of the population if we exclude this natural populations of, say, children, pregnant women, and so on. What I mean to say is Malaysia may come to a situation where we have no choice but to track all the non-citizens of Malaysia. When I say non-citizens, they can be broadly divided into four categories. The first category would be regular migrants or documented migrants. The second category would be undocumented migrants. Third category, refugees. Fourth category, stateless people. And these four categories may comprise up to 6 million people in Malaysia. So if we include all of them, we might just be able to cover 70% of the resident population, meaning every person that resides in Malaysia, regardless of their citizenship status. And only then will we be able to achieve 70%. Thirdly and finally, there will be a policy implication over here. If we include all the non-citizens of Malaysia into the vaccination program, as we should, if we're going to achieve 70%, then we'll have to consider how to access these populations, meaning how do we deliver the vaccines to them? How do we finance the vaccines to them? And for the undocumented migrants, should there be consideration for whether or not we provide amnesty to them? And this cannot be a short-term solution. The final point I'll make over here is the importance of durable solutions to the issues surrounding non-citizens in Malaysia. We cannot just deliver a vaccine solution and then wash our hands and imagine that our work is done, because the durable solutions that are needed for this great numbers of people in Malaysia is long overdue, and probably COVID is the right time for us to start it.
Now, the PM has also said that the authorities have been instructed to make optimal use of not only healthcare facilities, but also venues like stadiums, convention centres and community halls, as well as the vaccination centres. And we're starting to see that. I think it was the Bukit Jalil, the Shah Alam Stadium that's been used. Now, this seems like a good idea to make vaccinations more accessible. But I mean, you've highlighted here how important the logistics of all this is and the cold chain needed for the deployment of some of the vaccines. What other precautions, extra precautions, are needed to be taken into consideration as we make this part of the logistics rollout?
We can go back a little bit in time to the United States and frankly many other countries around the world in the 50s and 60s, where they ran polio vaccination in the community, meaning churches, sometimes even bowling alleys were converted into temporary pop-up polio vaccination sites in the 1950s and 60s. And it was a very successful effort, not just in the US, but in very many countries. What lessons can we learn there that we can apply to the COVID vaccination program? There could be several. The first one would be, we need proper training, meaning if we're going to create an additional 600 sites of community centers and so on and so forth, right, in Malaysia, then we'll have to have additional staff. And what I mean to say is that we cannot just simply draw this additional staff for the sites away from Ministry of Health hospitals and clinics, meaning we need to provide additional training to, it could be private providers, it could be retired doctors, retired nurses, and so on. And the training of this staff is crucial to make sure that they're able to provide the necessary oversight, provide the necessary skills for them to thaw the virus, the vaccine, meaning from minus 70, it needs to be thawed to an appropriate temperature before it's injected. And all that requires a special set of training. So I think that would be one extra precaution that we must take into consideration. The second extra precaution for using venues like stadiums, convention centers, and community halls with the logistics, like I've mentioned. And the third extra precaution for us to consider is that this is now inside the community. And in the community, in the sense that the people who go into these sites, they might not be used to a non-hospital or non-clinic facility for them to deliver, to receive healthcare services. So it's a bit of an unusual situation for them because they're not surrounded by, shall we say, resuscitation equipment. They're not surrounded by very many trained healthcare professionals all operating in the same space, and they can back each other up. So this might require us to deliver the message to the population that this is as safe as a hospital and as a clinic. In fact, could be safer because at the moment, if hospitals are handling COVID patients, then we're transferring the vaccination to a non-COVID site, for example, it could be safer. So these are the three extra precautions: training, logistics, and shall we say, vaccine confidence and confidence of the population in going to non-traditional healthcare sites.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Kaur. That was health policy specialist Dr. Kaur Swee King talking to us about the government's COVID-19 vaccination plan, which they have announced. And we've been given a timeline running into February of 2022.
But again, when we look at this vaccine rollout over the next 1 year, which is, I mean, the aim is by the end of by February 2022, all the targeted groups, but everyone eligible in Malaysia would have gotten their vaccines. I think they're going to start with the 18s and aboves from May onwards. First, the frontliners, then the vulnerable groups, and then we'll go to the rest of the population. But the rollout, it's very important, as Dr. Kaur pointed out, that Malaysia learns from other countries. Look at the UK, for example, the first to get the rollout. I have friends there who got their first vaccination. And then, you know, how I think was it Moderna or Pfizer said you had to take the next, or the guidance was take the next dose 3 weeks later. They're getting months later. And I think the company has come out to say that, hey, we can't guarantee the efficacy of this if it's done after the case. My aunt in London, same thing.
Yeah,
stretched out.
Yeah, which brings me to this question. How are they going to register patients, right? Right now, nobody has visibility on how do you register, or is it going to be like lottery? Even when I talked to my friends in Singapore, I think there was some indication that the elderly people who haven't gotten their vaccine yet have been told to stand by. And people who are like just 18 and above are pretty much in the dark waiting for their turn.
So lots more still to be hashed out when it comes to this vaccine rollout plan. The issue of undocumented persons as well is another one that hasn't been resolved because, as Dr. Kaur pointed out, do we offer amnesty to them in order to get them vaccinated? Who's going to be paying for the vaccinations in that case? A lot of questions that still need answers. But right now we are heading into the 7:30 news bulletin, and up next, talking about COVID vaccination passports with Vinup Goel of the International Air Transport Association. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.